This is a Stimulus Network podcast.
The Cosmic Shed.
Hello, and welcome to The Cosmic Shed. I'm Andrew, and today's episode is a little bit of a departure for The Cosmic Shed. Because, although there is science fiction in here, and there is science in here, there's also a fair amount of art. Because in today's episode, we're bringing you an interview with Stanley Donwood. Stanley Donwood is an artist who has produced the cover art for all of Radiohead's albums. And bear this in mind when you listen to the interview shortly. According to Wikipedia, Stanley Donwood and Radiohead frontman Tom York met as art students at the University of Exeter. He also produces the art for all of Tom York's solo albums and Tom York's band Atoms for Peace, among a fair few other things, including a lot of the artwork that's associated with the Glastonbury Festival. What's that got to do with The Cosmic Shed? Well, Stanley Donwood has produced a book called Bad Island. There are no words, it's just imagery. The story is told through images. I'll read you what it says on the back cover. This is what Robert McFarlane, the author, says of it. Bad Island is an extraordinary, unsettling document, a silent species history in 80 frames, a mute future archive. I can imagine it discovered in the remnants of a civilization, a set of runes found among the ruins. Stark in its lines and dark in its vision, Bad Island reads you more than you read it. And it really is quite an extraordinary thing. Obviously, we'll post links to where you can get it from on the Cosmic Shed website, thecosmicshed.com. And another departure for the Shed is that today's interview is brought to you by Jess Howard, a new voice to the Cosmic Shed. And Jess travelled down to meet Stanley in his studio in Bath last week to talk to him about his art and his new book, Bad Island.
Hello, I'm a fellow human being and I am known as an artist, sort of accidentally really, and I have several names. The one that you might know is the one that I use most often, which is Stanley Donwood. Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
Well, I would say welcome to the Cosmic Shed, but we're not actually in a shed.
We sort of are in a shed.
Well, it's a very fancy shed if it is a shed.
Is it?
It's very nicely decorated a shed. Hello. Your other name, you mentioned that you have different names.
I have.
Your other one is Dan Rickwood.
That is one of them.
Yeah. So are we meeting you today as Stanley, not Dan?
We could meet as... Maybe I could be Lexton Morant.
Who's that?
That's another one of me.
What's that version of you?
Antiquarian and ghost hunter. I know. It's brilliant. You need all this. Also Sterling Bland.
What's that one?
Amateur archaeologist.
Incredible.
I know.
Why do you have a different name for each persona?
It's a split personality.
Right.
Really. So I can be... It started when I had little children and I was doing artwork and I thought I was a different person when I was changing nappies and washing up and all that sort of thing to what I was when I was doing artwork. So I thought I'd use a different name.
Yeah. And do you keep those kind of lives separate or do you try to?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. 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 Definitely.
Yeah. So you think if I was interviewing you as Dan today, would you answer questions differently, do you think?
Yeah.
So it's a completely different mindset as well.
I think so. I've never really thought about it, to be honest. It's like an automatic thing. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe I'm a little bit shy, really, at root. So I kind of take on other personas to conceal my feelings of inadequacy.
Kind of like putting on a different hat and feeling a different way.
Yeah. There's a really interesting film, a Woody Allen film called Zelig, where Woody Allen plays this character called something, or the Zelig is the surname, who is kind of congenitally unable to be himself, and where whoever he's with, he becomes like them. So if he was put in a kitchen, he'd sort of become a chef with the other chefs. And you know, so the stand-up bit that I remember, because like Woody Allen being Jewish, hilariously Darius Zelig, the character, is also Jewish. He's there on a podium with Hitler, and he starts like Sieg Heiling and stuff. So he's so he can't even conceal that, and it's a kind of, I think it's known as a sort of syndrome where you, it's like middle class people when they go to a garage, they start talking more working class. Right, mate? Yeah. Something wrong with the whatever car talk.
You could say that's being a social chameleon as well, and just being very social chameleon. Empathetic.
Yeah, empathetic or just pathetic.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. Radiohead. So how did your relationship with them develop? Like, how did that start off?
Brilliant. This is one that I've lied about so many times.
Am I going to get the truth?
Depends who you ask, which facet of my multifarious personality you ask. One of my favourite stories was that I was just walking along the street, and this like limo drives past really slowly in a kind of spooky curb crawling kind of way. Long limo, blacked out windows, and the window comes down and I hear these words, looks like he'll do, and I get grabbed bundled into the boot, driven off to a secure location and forced to do artwork for 20 years.
That doesn't sound good at all.
It's
actually
not true.
That's
a
lie.
Good. Yeah, it's a lie.
Can we have not the truth, another lie? And then I have to guess which one's the truth.
Yeah. Well, I was hitchhiking around the countryside and I was making money by fire breathing. And I turned up in Oxford and I ended up in a back garden demonstrating fire breathing to a bunch of people who said, you should be our support act when we play in a pub later tonight. I said, that'd be brilliant. And so I turned up to the pub with the band and with me fire breathing accoutrements. But I was not allowed to fire breathe as a support act due to health and safety considerations, which, thinking about it, were entirely reasonable.
In a pub, yeah.
Yeah, that is true. That
pretty flammable
one. That's
places.
Totally true. Yeah, I'm not lying. That's what happened. That's how I met the band now known as Radiohead. They weren't called Radiohead then.
What were they called at the time?
This is actually more embarrassing for them than me. They were called On a Friday.
On a Friday.
Yeah. Because they used to rehearse
On a Friday.
I know. Ha ha.
Can I have the actual story?
That's it.
That is it.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Final answer?
Yeah, final answer.
That's what will be put out into the world?
Yeah, I know. I was a failed tree surgeon and I was unemployed.
Yeah.
Making money, cash in hand, fire breathing. In a busking style.
Yeah.
I don't do fire breathing anymore. It's very, very bad for you.
Do you have to hold like alcohol in your mouth, don't you?
Paraffin.
Oh.
I know.
Horrible.
I know. Horrible.
I still can't tell if you're fully telling
me.
No,
that was totally true.
Okay.
Totally true.
I believe you kind of.
Fire breathing is really easy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It doesn't look easy.
Yeah, that's the trick of it. It looks really impressive, but it's very easy and very dangerous and stupid.
Yeah.
I totally don't advise anyone ever to do fire breathing.
But is it very fun?
No, it's not even fun.
Oh, God.
It's disgusting.
Oh.
Disgusting. And you don't make very much money. You make just about enough money to go to the pub and buy more paraffin for doing it again.
Mmm.
Yeah.
Like a self-sustaining bad habit.
I think if I carried on doing that, I would now be dead. And also tree surgery, very bad. I think now I would have had to either retire or be dead.
If you were a tree surgeon?
Yeah, I think it's up there with deep sea fishing along dangerous jobs.
Just because the sheer amount of trees you have to climb, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And a high voltage line clearance.
That's true.
Very, very lucrative.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
Tricky.
Don't touch two wires. One is okay.
Okay. Never two.
Never two. Okay. You're dead. Ooh. Instantly dead. Oh, even squirrels, they have to jump from one wire to the other wire.
Do they have the arm reach to touch two at the same time, though?
They have to. That happens. And they get sort of desiccated.
Oh.
Yeah. Between the two wires. They're still there when you see them.
Back to Radiohead for a second.
Ah, yeah. The sweet relief of the most cheerful band in rock.
What does your process look like when you're working with them? Do they come to you with an idea of what they want the album art to look like?
Oh, that would be nice. No. It's sort of like, I've tried to be like a different person. This is a theme, isn't it? I've tried to be a different person for each record that I've worked on with them. It's sort of like my original idea, along with the pseudonyms, because I've called myself different things for doing that. The idea was that people buying a record would think it would be a different person doing the artwork each time, which sort of kind of works if you look at the artwork dispassionately. I think there's there's lots of things to separate. It's not like the same style or the same method or medium or technique or anything. So each one's different. So I usually start with quite early in the process of them making a record, sort of when they're fucking about, basically. You know,
yeah.
the sort of thing that you do in a shed, really. But they do it in their sort of shed. A musician's shed is basically a recording studio where you start trying things out. So when they're trying things out, I'm also trying things out. And I this wasn't a sort of intentional method of working. It's something that's evolved. I sort of try to listen to what the music looks like, if you know what I mean.
So you've got to listen to music.
Yeah, listen to the music while it's being composed or where it's taking shape. And hopefully at the same time, artwork is taking shape. So most recently, Tom did a record called Anima that came out last year. And for that, I started by writing down everything that came into my mind when I listened to it. So it was a long list of just abstract ideas, anything. You know, if you listen to any sort of music, you know, stuff comes into your head, right? So if you just wrote down everything that came into your head when you were listening to, I don't know, some famous bit of music, I don't know, I Should Be So Lucky by Kylie Minogue.
Yeah.
If you listen to that, like, what comes into your head? And you think, oh, well, I don't know. Basically, the set of, like, Neighbours, really, that kind of thing, first of all. But also, maybe, what else? I Should Be So Lucky. Do you know it?
Yeah.
Kylie Minogue.
Yeah, I've got it in my head. Lucky.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, actually, not a lot comes into my head. Maybe it's because of the complexity of the music that a lot comes to mind. Whereas I Should Be So Lucky, it's like the set of Neighbours. A sort of blue sky, maybe?
Yeah.
Sort of, that's about it.
I see pink.
Pink.
A lot of pink. Maybe pink shorts?
Pink shorts.
Is that just Kylie Minogue related?
Could be. Probably. Could be. This is proper shed, isn't it? Kylie Minogue's pink shorts.
Yeah.
Superimposed on a blue sky.
So you described a bit about your artistic process during... Yeah. The album design and how you use a lot of different mediums.
Yeah.
Do you have a favourite that you'd like to work with?
No, not really. I guess they're sort of different in different ways. Like painting is really good because it's very immediate. And then computers are quite good because they've got an undo function.
Yeah.
Drawing with a pencil or a pen is just really quite nice. I like linear cutting because it's very... It's almost like a kind of meditation. So I can listen to radio, I can listen to podcasts and carry on working, which I can't do with a lot of other processes because they're sort of too brain heavy, if you know what I mean. But whereas linear cutting or drawing, very brainless, kind of empty in your head.
I know what you mean, because with linear cutting, it's almost like you do the thinking and the planning before you start cutting.
Ah.
So when you're cutting, you're carving away what you've already planned, I guess?
Yeah, that might be the case if you were a kind of thought, thinking ahead kind of...
Are you not that?
No.
Okay.
Like really, really brainless. Blank bit of lino. And you draw with the chisel. It's almost because it's... don't know, it's sort of... And you have to do everything back to front.
Yeah, but you don't even block it out or anything. You're just straight on there with the chisel.
I do look at pictures, but then you have to really simplify it. So if it's like that one.
Yes.
That was a line of cut, even though it's screen printed out.
Is that one of the Glastonbury ones? Yeah.
That was for last. Yeah. So that was a line of cut, but I looked at clouds. That was from looking at Art Nouveau posters. And I was trying to imagine how to do clouds in an Art Nouveau style. So I went on the internet and I looked up Art Nouveau clouds, and there aren't any. really. They hardly ever... Art Nouveau, basically, there's no landscapes. They didn't do landscapes.
No.
Which was a bit of a fucker, because otherwise I would have just copied an Art Nouveau landscape. But as it was, I had to sort of, like, imagine how I might have done it. So I drew some clouds like that in a sketchbook. So I drew, I sort of, for a line of cutting, I simplify things from what they really look like to how I think I can cut them with a chisel, with a pencil.
Yeah.
So I draw it, and then I copy my pictures that I've drawn with a pencil onto the liner.
But not through tracing, no. Still freehand. No. That's really interesting.
That would be like a job if I did that. It would just be, you just have to do it. It'd be like painting by numbers, which in some ways is brilliant because it takes the actual like work out of it. But in other ways, it's just sort of boring because you're just doing something that has to be done in a certain way.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't know what you're going to do, anything could happen. So it's not boring. It's not like work. I'm trying to avoid work.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you're probably doing brilliantly by hosting like, a podcast called The Cosmic Shed.
Yeah. Well, it's not my podcast.
Not your podcast.
No. I'm just a guest.
Guest.
Interviewer, I guess.
But still.
Yeah.
What about the fellow who runs the shed?
Yeah, Andrew.
Has he got a proper job?
Yeah, he's a lecturer. So he's my lecturer.
He's your lecturer?
Yeah.
He's got you doing this?
Yeah.
God almighty. I hope he's paying off your student loan.
Do you hear that?
Yeah. Because really, that's terrible.
Your artistic process for other things, is it the same when you're creating a book or do you find it completely different? So obviously you've got to like construct more of a narrative?
Yeah. Again, you'd hope so.
Mm.
But... So are we talking about Bad Island? Is that why?
We're coming around to Bad Island, okay. But yeah, we can start talking
just,
about it now.
No, I just wondered. Because I stupidly did 3 books at the same time last year. And I vowed to myself, I'd never do that again.
Hello, Shed listeners. Just Andrew here, just popping in to say that I edited this bit out of the conversation because... It went off on them arranging how they were going to get home to their various places. And that ended up in a conversation about Brexit. But if I don't tell you it's about Brexit, then the next bit won't make any sense.
Thanks, racists.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can't talk about that.
No. Well...
That would just fill the shed with toxic fog.
That's true. And we want good shed vibes.
We want good shed vibes.
Now back to the end of the world.
Yeah. Bye, racists. We're not talking about you. Yeah, at the end of the world. Yeah, because that's sort of science. Science fiction.
Yeah, exactly.
Or is it science fact?
It was kind of both.
It is a bit, isn't it? I'd done a book, and it's called Bad Island. It was sort of an accidental thing. So I was going around London, meeting various publishers, with the idea of making a book about all of the artwork I'd been doing over the past... sort of quarter of a century. And I was sort of going around and I sort of worked out this sort of pitch. I was like, hi, I'm this person and this is what I do and I like to do a book of this sort of style. And I sort of got it all the patter and everything, you know, roll up, that sort of thing. And one publisher I went to was Penguin and they said, we're not interested in your stupid book about your stupid pictures that you've done. We don't care. But how about, why don't you do a book, like a little book that's like a novel without any words? Or just, okay, I thought, that's great. Yeah, sure. And this is how you end up doing more than one book at a time. Stupid. Don't ever do this. What I should have said was, that's a great idea. Can I get back to you in about a year after I've finished this book that you're not interested in? But instead I said, no, that'd be great. I'll start when I get home. So I did. And it became what it became after reading a few books, really, by other people. One is Jared Diamond, who's written a few books. The first book of his I read was called Collapse. He's written others. Most famously, I think, Guns, Germs and Steel, which is about how we, as in white Europeans... have sort of come to dominate a lot of the planet. And he says the answers are guns, germs and steel, really. You could boil it down to that. And also the shape of continents, north, south, east, west sort of thing. Anyway, blah, blah. His book Collapse was about how civilizations reach a sort of point and then start to collapse slowly at first and then very quickly. And he's sort of, his thesis is that you can look at pretty much any civilization that has risen in the past and then fallen, and they all follow a kind of similar trajectory. So that's very interesting. If you're in a very successful civilization that has risen very, very fast, and when you think about like other civilizations that have existed in the past, they've lasted for a very long time, like the Imperial Romans, the Greeks, there was a Native American culture. I can't remember that. Begin with an N. Anyway, long time. And Australian Aborigines, the longest lasting civilization ever. 12,000 years they managed until white Europeans turned up. And well, you've seen how that ended up. Massive bushfires and pollution dying off of huge million-year-old coral reefs. Yeah. Anyway, so this was all part of the food for thought. So Jared Diamond was an influence. And also, I don't quite know how to say his name, but Noah something Harari, who wrote Sapiens.
Yes.
And Homo Deus and 21 Reasons to Think We Might Not All Die.
Something like that, Like that. So I haven't read the last one.
Yeah. So it was him and Jared Diamond and various other writers who write very presciently about our situation and how it compares with previous situations.
Yeah.
And how every culture and civilization thinks it's the one that's got it right. Because we think technology is going to save us. We're really wrong. We're all going to die. In fact, you could boil it all down to that. Just cut everything out. We're all going to die.
End of podcast.
Brilliant, yeah.
Yeah.
Just really short.
Do you think there is any hope? Are you hopeful?
No.
For the future?
No.
Not at all?
We're fucked. Absolutely. Look at it. For God's sake. They just let Donald Trump off. I know. They just elected Boris Johnson. The guy's a fucking joke. They're both off the telly. We elected people off the telly to run the world. Honestly, we deserve everything that's coming.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about when you're making art, when you're creating something, are you having fun? I've looked at a few things that you've done, and there was an exhibit somewhere and someone asked you after seeing it if you had mental health problems.
Oh yeah.
And you'd said something like,
oh, they're on the wall.
Yeah, they're not in my head anymore, they're on the wall.
That's true, yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. And then also
he was a psychiatrist.
I know.
I didn't know. Nobody told me.
You were tricked.
I was tricked.
And then I read also that you did like a fake tour in Bath telling tourists completely inaccurate facts.
Yeah.
So it's like you've obviously got a really that playful side with art, and then a serious nightmarish side as well.
I think the thing with the mental health question, I honestly didn't know he was a psychiatrist, and if I had known, I probably would have been a little bit more circumspect about what I said. I can't remember what I said, but I was probably quite unguarded, like I am being now. You know, in that way, like with a European accent, he was a Dutch gentleman. And he said, so, seems to me you have mental health problems. And if you are suffering, I could help you. I was like, what? Yeah. It was almost like something from a film.
Mm.
But yeah, I'm not aware of a sort of cathartic process when I'm sort of doing artwork, but it must be... Because arguably you could say I make quite miserable pictures. They're not Kylie Minogue's pink shorts on a blue sky background, for instance. Because that could be done quite nicely. You could have really nice sort of like maybe some clouds, sun, and sort of could be quite, but it's not my style. So maybe I am kind of venting some sort of, because you know we're all going to die and all that sort of thing.
Sure.
And if I truly felt that, I'd probably get depressed, you know, or maybe I am, but I'm sort of doing artwork which sort of covers it up. Don't know. Need to be a top ranking Dutch psychiatrist to get to the bottom of this. Mm. You might be a top rank. I don't know.
You don't know who I am, psychiatry?
No, I don't. You could be anyone. What are you studying?
Science communication.
That's good. I'm glad that that's a thing, because that has been a problem with the scientists and their communication.
Yeah,
historically.
Not great at it.
Yeah, well, you could argue they're not great at it, but also they are great at it, because look at religion now. Christianity, anyway, in this country, it's fucked. It's over. Look at all those churches, empty. People only go because they're like quite nice to look at. Scientists have done for Christianity, which is great.
Do you think that's all down to scientists?
Pretty much, you know. Yeah. Well, like, all those churches, the Victorians, very big on churches, restoration of churches, building of new ones, and splitting off into sects. And then, you know, Darwin. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the First World War. I think that fucked it up. And then the Second World War finished it off, really.
Still going, though.
Well, Christianity?
Yeah.
Not really.
No, you don't
Not
think...
really. Not here. I mean, in some places.
Mm.
You know. But here, oh, Western Europe, I think a mixture of science and war has finished it off. Or the application of science to war. Or the application of industry to war. Because our most recent wars have been quite industrial, haven't they?
Yeah, I was going to say...
But and guns, those two words put together.
Machines and guns.
Yeah.
Wars generally turn people against scientists as well, though, because you have...
They were the Nazi scientists, weren't they?
Also English, like, or anyone. If you are a scientist who's created a new bomb, then you're a very scary person in the homes
That's
of
true, yeah.
People.
That's true. Like Oppenheimer. Yeah. I think... They all had considerable regrets after their work was turned against its theoretical...
original purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, lovely science.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, the communication of science is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of like... Do you think the scientists feel a bit sort of up against ignorance again?
No, it's actually like moving away from that a lot because that's how traditionally it's been communicated, is like the public are ignorant. If they could only understand, then they'd support what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So it's now moving towards like a dialogue between public and scientists and policymakers.
Yeah.
That's how like the field of science communication is moving.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yes, it is great. I hope it's successful, because the alternative is... That's religion, isn't it, really? Or
just scientists that are in their own bubble.
Yeah.
Because science for science sake is great, but if there's no application for real
science
people...
Science needs funding, obviously, which got to come somewhere.
Or behaviour change in the public.
Yeah.
Or policy.
Yeah. But the money for research has got to come from a central authority, whether that's a state or... private individuals or corporations. Probably better if it's a state that represents people democratically rather than a shareholder-driven, money-making corporation or billionaire individuals who've made their money in questionable ways.
Yeah. But yeah, so this whole podcast, The Cosmic Shed, is like an act of science communication as well.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. You say you listened to podcasts earlier.
I have done.
What podcast do you like?
Oh, there was one. It was great. It was kind of a modern interpretation of an H.P. Lovecraft story called The Strange Case of Charles Dexter Ward. It was great. It was sort of like... it started off like a podcast. So there was two people. So there was someone like you, and there was like a more adult version of me. And they were called The Mystery Machine. That was the name of the podcast. And they were kind of looking into these sort of mysteries. like that thing, like a locked room mystery, I think it's titled. But they got sort of pulled into it. I went off to interview people, oh my God, and it got really scary and real. But it was all made up. It was brilliant.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. So yeah, it's on like BBC Sounds, I think.
Okay.
If you look up Charles Dexter Ward, it'll be there somewhere. And also, I've got a friend called Adam Buxton, and he does a really nice podcast. He's great at it.
I love his podcast. Ah, they are. It's great.
Yeah.
So funny. I just listened to his Christmas one with Joe Cornish.
Oh, really? I must listen to that. And he's just, I found out yesterday, he's done one with the woman who wrote about surveillance capitalism. The Age of Surveillance Capitalism is her book, which I haven't read yet because it's not, I think it's only just out in paperback. But it's, you know, it's the big new non-fiction book, I think. And he's done a podcast with her. That's which amazing. She's super clever. He's super funny and super clever. It's going to be great.
Have you listened to that episode?
No.
God.
I've just literally, Bijan, who was here earlier, he sent me the link to it.
The Glastonbury artworks.
Yes.
How did you get into that? Because that's an amazing...
Ah, that was mad as well. You know when... when you have children, they're really... They just get up really early. They're really, really shockingly early. It's like, it's kind of, it can be dark. They don't care. Anyway, so you're kind of this bemused person when you have young children. Like, a lot of the time, you're a bit dazed. And part of this is, so you have to do things. They're like, you can't entertain them. So one of the things, you have to take them to play groups so they meet other little children. They're really interested in other little children. Like adults, we're like furniture. So they're like eyes, they're like, other children. So anyway, play groups. So we were there with the early morning bleariness and all that sort of thing. Kids, brilliant. And got talking to like a woman who was at the play group. Also bleary, sort of bloodshot. Oh my God. The coffee at play groups, they're normally in redundant religious buildings because of science. They have to do something with them. So, and in redundant religious buildings, they have the shittiest coffee. It's like really terrible coffee in church halls. And so this woman said, oh, I've got some proper coffee at my house. Do you want to come back to have some real coffee? And so me and my partner, who we were with both at the playgroup, said, that'd be brilliant. So we go to this woman's house and have some proper coffee. Start feeling marginally more human, but having young children takes years, so you don't feel normal for a long time. So we have this really nice coffee. It turns out she's the daughter-in-law of Michael Eavis. And I said, how, that's funny. So that's the Glastonbury Michael Eavis. She said, yeah. What about you? What are you doing? I said, well, I'm kind of an artist. And so I end up doing the T-shirt for Glastonbury. And then I end up doing like everything for Glastonbury, like artwork-wise, over the course of... That was in 2002. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I've been doing it for donkey's years. Long time. Too long. I'm like 51. I shouldn't be doing it anymore. I should give it to someone younger.
Do you feel like you're done with it, though?
I think I'm too old. Like, I've just been too many times. Like with a lot of things, I just think people should stop doing stuff when they're a certain age. I don't think people should be allowed to vote after the age of 50 or drive a car after the age of 50. Because people over the age of 50, they've got all the money, all the decision-making is in their hands, really. Like, so if that happened, public transport would be loads better for a start. And probably be free. Because they've all got fucking bus passes. Jesus. Honestly. So bus passes for everyone over the age of 50. No voting. You swap your Democratic mandate for a bus pass and a train pass. It'd be great. And also, you can't work anymore. Because, honestly, it's so depressing. You go to a shop and there's a pensioner working there. Really, they should be taking it easy on the Costa Brava or somewhere. Not working in Sainsbury's. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just theoretical, by the way, because I've got no power at all.
Yeah, that's interesting because you're like self-admittedly in that group.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're saying that you shouldn't have right to vote.
No, no. Really, look at our record, my generation. We were supposed to have sorted shit out, really. Because we were aware. We've been banging on about the environment and everything for like ages. Since the 1980s. And we have done fuck all. Nothing's happened. Like as Greta Thunberg said, like she's been doing the school strike for about 80 weeks or something. To what end? Nothing's happened. Like she said.
Yeah.
It's terrible. So I think everyone over 50 should get off the boat. Jesus Christ, jump overboard.
Get off the boat and onto the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get off that's the boat. That's your campaign slogan.
That's great. What was the other one? We're all going to die.
Yeah.
Get off the boat and onto the bus. And there was another thing.
Something about sheds being the best.
Sheds are the. That's just what your overlord wants you to say. I'm not saying anything about sheds. I've got mixed feelings about sheds. Very mixed feelings. It's like the countryside. Nice to look at, they are, but not so nice to live in.
It's a lot of mud in the countryside. It's my only problem with it.
Yeah. Mud and racists.
You painted with mud once.
I did.
I read that somewhere.
I did, yeah. Yeah, quite recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because painting is really, it's like coloured mud, really.
Yeah, I mean.
It's the same texture. Well, it's lots of texture. Sticky, runny, full of grit if you mix it with grit. Yeah, I did paint with mud. I was doing this thing for, I did a book with Robert McFarlane and it was called Ness and it was about the coast, really, coastal regions. So I thought, God, I took things really literally. I thought I would make pictures with what he was writing about, but it didn't really work.
No?
No. Well, it did work. It was all right. But the first edition of the book we did with printed letterpress, which is how everything used to be printed. But it's quite a rudimentary printing technique. You have to get a picture and turn it into etched metal plate that then gets covered in ink and pushed onto a bit of paper. So subtlety and nuance is not very easy to capture using that method. So these pictures with mud and soot and charcoal and chalk and stuff you could do as a sort of lithograph, which is a different technique, so I had to abandon those. Yeah, it was kind of mud painting with mud.
Did you have that on canvas?
No, they were on big sheets of paper, actually. Big sheets of paper taped to big bits of wood.
And what did you do with them when they didn't work? Was it dried mud? Did the mud dry on?
The mud did dry on. Okay. So the mud was, you used the mud to make a mark, really. Lots of things, anything that make a mark and you can draw with. So I was using, you get coal, sea coal, bits of coal washed up on beaches, and bits of chalk, clay and mud and soot from burnt sticks. It's that sort of thing. And seawater. Obviously, anything, make a mark, you can draw a picture with. So they were quite nice, but they were no good for the book.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do an exhibition of them, actually, sometime late spring this year. Not sure exactly when yet, because we're doing an audio book on vinyl of Ness with hopefully a well-known actor reading the words, and hopefully the genius conductor Hugh Brunt of the London Contemporary Orchestra doing sound, and I think it will be Penguin's first vinyl release. I'm not sure, they might have done one in the past, but first one for a while. So 12-inch record, which would be really good, and hopefully when that comes out I'll do the exhibition of all of the stuff to do with the artwork as
The mug that you got, was it from Suffolk where the book's about? It is.
Well, the coast of Suffolk, an estuary.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's a tidal estuary between Essex and Suffolk, the River Stour. So
I know it, I've been there.
Have you?
I grew up in Suffolk and went to college in Essex.
Did you?
So yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
So near Hadley in Suffolk.
Yeah, I know it very well.
And then
it's got a brilliant hardware store, Hadley. There was a pig farm, but now it's a Matalan.
Yeah, I know where that is. That was a pig farm.
Yeah, it really stank. Pig shit's fucking nasty.
Yeah.
So you go to college and like painting pictures to the distinctive odour of pig shit.
Oh.
It was sort of like a 1960s technical college built in what I guess was the countryside.
And yeah, now
it's not
been,
the countryside anymore.
No, now there's like town all around it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, excellent. So the River Stour, that's where they were made.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on like social media?
Oh, right. On Instagram, at Stanley Dunmore.
At Stanley Dunmore.
And I think the same on the Twitter as well. And I've got a venerable website, slowlydownward.com. It's got some ancient stuff on there. Oh, yeah, Radiohead, we've just done a new public library. Radiohead.com has now got everything we've ever done on it.
All your artworks are up there?
Yeah, loads of shit. There's nice. And loads of them playing music, you know, in various ways and all sorts of things. That was good. I've got a book out, which is the point of this, called Bad Island, coming out 13th of February. It's just about to come out. It's just come out.
Yeah.
You edit to according to preference. Shed Overlord. I can actually see him.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you know what he looks like?
Yeah. He's got a big cloak, a pointed hood on the cloak.
You know what would be awesome?
And when he turns round, like, in the hood, there's nothing there apart from, like, red dots where the eyes would be.
I feel like that could be your next book.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Shed Overlord.
Right. Thank you for talking to us today.
Shut up.
Thank you very much indeed to Jess Howard and to Stanley Dunwood and all his other alter egos for that interview for us here on the Cosmic Shed. I hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did. As I say, you can go to thecosmicshed.com for the links to where you can buy Stanley Dunwood's book Bad Island and obviously links to Stanley Dunwood's work. And of course, where you can find Jess Howard online as well. And we'll be back soon with another episode, but I'm not quite sure what yet. But thank you very much for listening.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.
This podcast is brought to you by the Stimulus Network.
Do you edit it later to get rid of all the
rubbish? Well, this is the dream, because I don't edit this later. Andy edits this later.
Andy edits all the fucking swear words out.
Exactly.
Brilliant. That's fucking nice.
So this is not my job.
Fucking job.
Exactly. Brilliant. So you feel free.
Great.
Let's not make his job too hard.
I'll fucking be fine.
Sorry, Andy.
Well, he has to put bleeps in or something. Just,
I actually
just
don't know if swearing is allowed on the Cosmic Shed.
I think it is. It's not like it's the BBC.
I mean, we're all adults.
Exactly.
We'll
Children
see.
Aren't going to listen to this.
No.
Oh, little fuckers.